second they cross the threshold, he plants his lips on hers, kissing her fiercely, yanking her body against his. Then he pulls away. "I'm sorry I was gone so long," he mutters, their steamy breaths mixing together in the tiny space between them. "It's okay." Her eyes sparkle with genuine relief. He hates her so much in that moment. He's never cared much for the opinions of women, but he thought she'd be different when she held him down and fucked his brains out. He'd hoped to meet someone who could keep up with him, who could compete and make him feel something. She's just another disappointment in a galaxy of disappointments. "When I figured we weren't going to make it back," he says, "I kept thinking I wanted to see you again. Had to get back to you." Dorian would like to ice the cake with a few stray tears, but he's never been able to cry on command. He's never cried much at all, in fact. Not when his monster of a father died. Not when his slut of a mother died. And not now. The only time he ever remembers crying was when he was a child, and his chess coach decided to teach him a lesson in humility and soundly beat him in 6 moves. Dorian had responded with furious tears, taking up the king in his fist and swinging hard enough to cut the coach's cheek with its crown. His parents had settled the case out of court. Anne slides her hand up the back of his neck to grasp his thick hair.
"It's okay now. You're okay."
She pulls his head toward hers. Her muscles are so raw, so potent for a woman. Her sexual hunger so great that Dorian wonders if she could be taught to be smarter. She's not worth it, of course, but then who is? Dorian's ideal mate isn't likely to exist, naturally. She needs to be molded, crafted, in the same way a great sculptor makes stone into something that can transcend time. Soldiers all go through boot camp, where they're broken down and remade. Anne did it once before. He can make her even greater. "I wish we had time for this," he whispers. "But there isn't even food in here. We need to provide for these people."
"I know," she replies.
"We lost one because he couldn't follow the simplest goddamned instructions. I told them how to move, when to move, and one of the bugs just scooped him up. I'm going to tell you something my chess coach once told me. The weakness of others isn't your fault. When it comes down to it, they have to learn to pull their own weight. If someone dies out here, the only person to blame is the saboteur." She pulls away.
"Do we know who it is yet?"
He shakes his head. "You know the smart money is on Blue."
"She wouldn't do that."
"Anne, there are things you don't know, things I haven't told you," he says. "She was conspiring with what remains of Siegson Corporation to steal Weyland-Yutani's secrets. That's who Elise Kodo, Blue's boss, was working for."
"That doesn't mean she wanted us all dead," Anne protests. "You don't know her like I do."
"Really?" Dorian says. "She was about to be fired, lose her insurance, die on a long trip back to Earth just so they could deliver a husk of a body. I listened to some of her voice notes. She was looking for a cure. She'd do anything to survive, including defrauding our company to the tune of millions of dollars. And now? She's the only person not actively in danger, so no. I can't say for a fact that she's the saboteur, but we're all in this together. Everyone except her." Anne grits her teeth.
"That's just not..."
"We don't have to talk about it now. We need to make a supply run. Just for basics, food and the like." She nods, but she looks white as a sheet. Dorian hopes that inside that brain of hers, all the feelings for Blue are starting to die. He needs her alone, emotionally and physically, when he strikes. make a move too early, and his plan won't work. These are just techs, he says. None of them can carry their weight when scavenging. You and I should be the ones to make the first run. We've been alone out there before. He gives her a smirk. You saw how they looked at me. We're kind of the mommy and daddy now. Got to take care of the kids.
Okay. You're right, she says,
looking as if she's trying to psych herself up to go outside. If we can get to the front of the skiff, I saw a couple of boxes of ration bars in the break area. There's powdered creamer, too. High calorie content. That's not going to make everyone happy, but it'll keep us alive. A giddiness rushes through Dorian's veins. A checkmate is about to fall into place. All he has to do is get Anne out the door. Climate control kicks on, and a familiar thrum fills Rose Eagle's chambers. A sigh of relief rolls through the room, along with cool air. If the pumps inside the skiff are moving air from the chillers, that means Juno must be back online. Maybe Blue got it back online. Or Marcus. That means Blue is alive, and out there, too, making her moves. Unlike Dorian, she has the escape pod access codes. She doesn't have to achieve checkmate. Blue can just win the game. The corridors were clear on my way in, Dorian says. Never saw a single bug. If we're going to go, you need to be ready now.
Okay, Anne says. You're right. Let me just... No. You're right. Let's go.
Quick tip, though. Lose the shoes. 22. Decisions. The others stand back from the door, their eyes wide with fear, though they try to hide it. It's almost cute the way they try to be strong. They must think him so self-sacrificing to volunteer to get them food, and they're all too happy to agree to let him try it. That will be their demise. After a moment of waiting, no hissing creatures appear, so Dorian and Anne dart out into the hallway. He lifts up a cable run access grate, and they both slip inside. He used a lot of these on the way from Titus to Rose Eagle. They're small, but not impossible for a human adult, with frequent unsecured openings if they need to pop out. The problem with the skiff is that all of the rooms must be fully secured, so the cable runs aren't continuous. They reach a bend in the hallway, and Dorian rolls over onto his back, looking through the metal slats to see anything that might lie above. Satisfied that there's nothing lurking in the shadows, he pushes up the grate, careful to catch it so it doesn't make a sound when it swings open all the way. Anne follows, her movements lithe and silent, and Dorian wonders what she used to do for the Marines. In this combat arena, without all the social constructs that make her weak, she's beautiful. He wants her again, just to remind himself of how great she can be. He imagines what it would be like, grunting and sweaty against a wall, while murderous hunters prowl the halls. It's not worth it. Not this time.
You okay?
She asks, her voice low.
Yeah,
he says. The next grating is around there. They pad to the corner, and he watches Anne meticulously check the hallway. Her motion is sure and deliberate. A clang rings out somewhere deeper in the skiff. It might be one of the creatures. It might also be Marcus. The synthetic has to be lurking out there creating a distraction in the kennels, working on Juno, or headed toward Rose Eagle. It'd be nice if they could confirm Blue is dead. Then his work with Anne would be so much easier. She motions him forward, and Dorian quietly jogs to the next grating. He swings it over, dips into the gap, positions himself, gets a couple of yards in, and stops dead. Something obstructs his path. Shafts of light filter through the grating, forming curved blades along a smooth, storm-gray surface. Dorian squints, trying to resolve the details, but it's about 5 yards away. Then it stirs slightly, revealing the telling profile of a snatcher skull. Its fingers twitch, and it presses its lips into them, as though in prayer. It's curled up, appearing to be fast asleep. The creatures have made it into the cable runs, a space scarcely big enough for people. A chill runs up Dorian's spine. He'd thought himself clever for using these. He'd thought they wouldn't burrow down here.
"Dorian,"
Anne hisses.
"Dorian, you have to let me in."
He can't tell her to shut up. If he wakes the lion sleeping before him, it'll be over in seconds.
"There's one coming down the hall," she whispers.
He's essentially fucked. If he backs out, he's dead. If it wakes up, he's dead. Perhaps he could scoot backward, reach up, and close the gate in Anne's face. It's not like she could argue with him, not with a ravening orgy of teeth and claws coming down the corridor. But then her inevitable scream would wake Dorian's new roommate, and that wouldn't end well. Dorian Suddler can't die like this. He won't. He's too goddamned important to die on his stomach like some victim begging for mercy. He deserves to meet his fate on his feet, because he is a fucking fighter, and this cannot be the end. Eyes open and fixed on the shining black death ahead of him, Dorian inches forward. He controls every noise he makes, no banging, no scratching, no loud respiration. It's less like he's breathing, and more like his lungs are open caverns through which oxygen sometimes blows. Slumber soundly, you beautiful creature. As soon as there's enough space for her, Anne squeezes into the cable run behind him. She shoves him forward slightly in the action, and his heart seizes with the thrill of it all. The creature is almost pitch black, but this close, it's like staring into the fires of Kaufman. Tears stream down Dorian's cheeks, and a wide smile spreads across his face. Maybe he was wrong about dying on his belly. Crawling within 2 yards of a sleeping snatcher is the single greatest thing he's ever done. It's better than his directorship, his massive gains share bonus, and any thrill his office can provide. A clank sounds out atop him, and he almost coughs in surprise. He looks up and finds a webbed, chitinous foot, close enough to touch, gripping the grating above him. A charge of electricity shoots through every part of his brain, lighting it up with all sorts of unhelpful suggestions. He feels the presence of the two creatures weighing upon his trapped, prone body. It is excruciating. It is exquisite. And then his mind becalms, as if something inside him gave way. He gingerly rolls onto his back and looks up at the animal. To his surprise, he sees no sexual organs. It rapes its way into this life, only to abandon the pursuit of sex in service of something greater. Moving from the co-opting of life to the destruction of the unworthy. Indeed, sex and reproduction would be such disappointing drivers for the greatest of creatures. As he lies still between the two chitinous grips of a black vice, he wants nothing more than to trick them, to beat them, and control them. He can't see Anne, but if she can see past him, she'll understand that they're well and truly fucked. He wants nothing more than to reach up and touch the long toe claw of the creature. It would be like a magnet, snapping him up into its grasp, turning the lightest caress into a hard lock. The death urge wells inside him, and he feels his hand moving forward of its own accord. The foot rises as the creature silently scuttles away.
Snapped out of the moment, Dorian still needs to get Anne to back out, so he gently kicks the top of her head with his bare foot, hoping she won't protest. He feels her warmth disappear as she slips out of the grate and into the open air. His broad shoulders brush the cable run's edges as he backs out after her, keeping his eyes locked on the slumbering snatcher the entire time. When at last he's free of the cable run, he places a finger to his lips and takes the grate, shutting it gently behind him. He feels flushed. His cheeks prickle. His skin beads with sweat. Anne is the opposite. Flower white, her face locked in grim damage assessment. Dorian points to the thing asleep inside the cable run, and she peers over, swallowing visibly at the sight of it. She makes some soldier gestures he doesn't know, but they end with a finger pointing toward a large fuse box with a shadowed corner. They sneak across the open floor, the longest 20 yards of Dorian's life, arriving to huddle together. She pulls him close, whispering into his ear.
"You saved my life, you ridiculous son of a bitch."
He would have died if she'd been caught. He knows that. Even so, he doesn't bother to disabuse her of her illusions. Instead of answering, he kisses her hard on the lips, sucking in her exhalation, his long hands wrapping around the base of her spine. He then jerks his head toward the break room. Moving his last piece into position, he has his regrets. He never got to touch one of the snatchers. Never got to watch a live impregnation. Never really closed down the Colt Forge. Still, if this next play goes well, the game is his. Interlude. Anne. They arrive at the break room with their breaths catching, their cheeks flushed. This has to be the highest risk run for coffee creamer in the history of mankind. Dorian seals the door behind them, and she checks the vents, all too small for one of the bugs. The walls are as thick as any laboratory wall, since space in the skiff was designed to be repurposed at a moment's notice. The Cold Forge was supposed to be an example of what special projects could do, given the right setup. Before she can even open her mouth, he's all over her, his hands roving her body, searching under her clothes. They both stink. She's fucking hungry, and wondering where those ration bars are. There's very little erotic about the moment, though she suspects Dorian finds eroticism in some strange places. She's seen this shit before in the field, and some grunts swear by a good combat jack. She's never tried, and doesn't plan to start. She refuses, and he accedes. That might be the thing she likes the most about him. He seems to intuit boundaries better than most of her former partners, certainly better than Blue did. "Sorry, I got carried away," he says. "Just celebrating life." They'd called Anne a synth fetishist in high school, and at first, Blue had been a dream come true. When she and Blue first started using Marcus's body to sleep together, Blue had been insatiable, as if she'd never touched another person before. The fact that Blue wasn't born a man bothered Anne, but the scientist quickly adapted to the role in admirable fashion, and satisfied Anne's urges in ways others couldn't. Then she'd started wanting to see Anne in person, to be close to her in that extremely mortal body of hers. Anne loved Blue for her perfection, and the female body did little to excite her. At least, that's what she told herself. She knew now that it was because she couldn't watch Blue die in close-up. It was too hard, knowing that she'd outlive her lover, and the stronger their bond became, the more painful things would get. Anne broke it off in the one act of cowardice she could remember committing. "Hey, we need to talk," Dorian says, interrupting her train of thought. She blinks, looking around the break room.
"Sorry. We should probably supply up and get the fuck back to safety."
Anne, stop, he says, coming to her and touching her shoulders. You understand that if we go back with those supplies, we're going to be doing a dozen of these runs for those ingrates. She looks over his face. Dorian is smiling, as if he's been looking forward to saying whatever it is he's about to say. She doesn't like it.
Hey, she responds. Like I said, not now. We need to get those ration bars and get back to the...
She stops, marches over to the cabinets and starts opening them one by one to find mostly empty shelves. There's some plasticware and a coffee service, but no rations. She turns to Dorian. This is what we can salvage from the skiff. He plops down a cardboard box, filled with bottles of powdered non-dairy creamer packets. He points to the count on the box. There are 2,000 packets in here. So that's 15 calories per packet. 30,000 calories total. She stops herself from gaping. This was never about creamer.
There are other supplies, she says. You said there were bars in here.
I needed to talk to you alone, and I think the creamer will prove my point. He pauses, then continues. A human can subsist on a steady diet of 300 calories per day, and you have 10 humans. So that's 10 days of food. Now, I'd like you to imagine how this is going to go. He raises his hands to his face, those slender pianist's fingers that she'd let touch her. First, we're going to rip open these packages of powdered hydrogenated oils and pour them into our mouths like sand. He mimes doing it with a product model's smile. That's 20 packets a day. Take them as you like. But there's no volume, and soon we're going to get very fucking hungry. Assuming we don't turn on each other, you and I will still be going out for supply runs, getting slower and dumber with each passing day, trying to outwit the most perfect killing machines ever born. Disgust wells inside of her, and she doesn't bother to hide it. He can't be suggesting what she thinks he is.
So what? That just means we have to get more food from the crew quarters.
You may have missed the decompressed bulkheads between here and there, Dorian says, his face placid, save for a twitch in his cheek.
You don't know shit about this station, so don't you fucking talk down to me like that, she says, her voice low. I'm the goddamned head of security. Titus is back online, Juno is online, we can equalize the pressure through the maintenance tubes and crawl. Listen, sweetheart. Dorian says, annoyance snarling his perfect smile. You may be head of security, but I do risk management for entire quadrants. I've seen tens of thousands of these people, these corporate drones, shuffle past. You know what you get when you throw these bullshit, unoriginal losers into crisis? Do you think it's a miracle?
No! They turn on each other.
Like you're doing right now.
Anne steps toward him. She could take out both of this twerp's kneecaps without breaking a sweat. He shakes his head. To turn on someone, you have to be on their side in the first place. You're the only person on my team, Anne. Now you can run back to your suicide mission, he says, smoothing a strand of hair away from her face. Or we can walk around the corner, step into two spacesuits, EVA through the docking area, and just go. She jerks back from his touch. What a conniving little piece of shit. She clenches her fists, but he gives her that serene smile. Think about it, he says. 1 week and a nap, and you could be on Gateway Station. She can't stand to look at him anymore, or she's going to punch his goddamned lights out. Turning away, she massages her temples. Or, she says through clenched teeth, you could go fuck yourself. Quiet fills the break room. He has no rejoinder. Her breath runs in and out of her lungs in a steady pump as she tries to control the speed and calm herself. Anne massages her eyes. They ache from a lack of sleep. It's not his fault if he's panicking. He's a civvy. Any normal human would start to question things in a situation like this one. She feels badly for the way she's treated him. He doesn't have the training for this. When she turns to tell him so, he hits her in the face with one of the solid aluminum chairs. Anne's world rings with the blow, and she teeters, desperately grasping for what just happened. Her cheekbone reverberates with pain from the strike, and she's only just put together the pieces when he hits her again, blasting her across the jaw, snapping it cleanly. She spills to the ground, a spray of spittle and blood whipping across the deck, glossing over a little white something. Her tongue tells her of the broken shards in her mouth, tells her that's one of her teeth. She's about to suck in a breath to scream out when Dorian's bare foot connects with her rib cage. Her air comes out in a whoosh. She's left gasping and rolls onto her stomach to better protect her face. It can't end like this. She wraps her hands behind her head, and he shatters her fingers with another blow from the chair. She's never felt such pain in her life. Not from her military service, not ever. Instinctively, she draws her hands under her, crying for him to stop with what breath she has. This is going to be a killing blow. She braces herself. Instead, he crushes her knee to the ground with his heel, and she feels something inside her leg give way. He hoists the chair and batters her bare feet, her ankles and shins, like he wants to flatten them into nothing. Surprise turns to fury. Anne lunges for him with her ruined hands, desperately launching from broken legs. He easily dips backward with the same placid smile he always wears. She'll bite his fucking throat out. He can't win. He can't beat her. Not this fucker. She crawls on her elbows, her broken fingers searing with every motion. Too late, Anne, he says. Wish you'd figured it out sooner. Her mouth and cheeks are too swollen to form words, but she wants to ask if he'd like to die. She would happily oblige his sorry ass. She's going to sink what's left of her teeth into his fucking ankles. How to be an animal, he says. How to survive. I gave you every chance. One metal leg comes down straight between her shoulder blades, bringing a blinding flash to her eyes. Every? The blow falls again, this time harder and sharper, like a corner of the metal strut. Fucking. It strikes one last time, and a bony crunch travels up her neck and over her skull, rattling her ears with a singular agony. Chance. Anne dips into the blackness. No. She won't let it end like this. She forces her eyes open. She can't feel her legs. Is her spine broken? No. She'd be out cold. Could be swollen. How much time has passed? Focus, Anne. Her spine isn't broken because her whole body flares with agony as Dorian grabs her arm and begins to drag her. Maybe it's just a vertebral chip. She's seen those before. She can't muster the voice to cry out. Her throat feels like it's been smashed. How long did he beat her after she was out? It doesn't matter. She's not going to die today. She has a boot knife, and she's going to drive it between Dorian's ribs, crawl back into the fucking break room, and cry for help. Exhaustion and shock tug at the corners of her mind, and she rips her brain free. Stay frosty. Beneath the sound of her labored breathing, there's an insistent scraping, metallic and long. One of her eyes is swollen shut, but she creaks open the other, to catch a glimpse of the aluminum chair flashing in the light between strides of Dorian's long legs. Drops of blood run down one side of it, shimmering across the brushed metal. Her fingers fish for her boot knife, but they've been so shattered she can't seem to get coordinated. Anne thinks she can make a grip, provided she doesn't go into shock. If she could just hook her... A fresh new hell greets her, as Dorian drops her and sets the chair in the middle of the hallway, doing so with a ballroom dancer's flourish. He's enjoying this. As soon as she can get her blade, she's going to enjoy it too. You, Anne Wexler, he grunts, hoisting her onto the seat, sending dizzying crackles through her neck. Are the closest I've ever come to loving someone. I want you to know what an honor that is. She tries to spit on him, but it dribbles down her chin. He's focused on her face. She's focused on that boot knife. Of course, I liked you more when you were prettier. It's going to be tough to swing at him, but she'll manage. She'll put every last ounce of rage into it and sink her blade into the side of his neck. Her right thumb still works, so does her ring finger. But nothing ever lasts. You were supposed to go that way, he says, pointing to the exit to the skiff and the airlock. She knows better. She never could have lived with herself if she'd done that. Her ring finger hooks into her sheath and unsnaps the guard. She murmurs, beckoning him closer. He leans in to try and decipher her words. I bet you think you're somehow superior, don't you? He asks. She's going to take his sorry ass out. The knife slips free of its binding, coming snugly into her palm. She's never needed it before, not for a person, but the Marines taught her how to gut a man, how to drive it deep into his femoral artery, and how to slice open his throat. She can really only get the right grip for the throat attack. He looks into her good eye with the smirk that once charmed away her guard. What? There's nothing you can say? She is better than him, and if she can get him to lean a little closer, she'll prove it. She whimpers something incoherent, and he leans in, putting his ear to her mouth. He's been inside her. It's her turn to be inside him. Her left hand sweeps out and smacks against the back of his neck. She fights through the pain to make a hook with the remains of her fingers as her right hand rips the knife from its sheath. She has one shot, and no matter how much it hurts, she's going to make it count. Dorian easily breaks free of her grip, and her knife impotently bounces off his cheekbone. She drew blood, but not nearly enough. He gasps, clutching his face and staggering backward. It wasn't enough. Now he's ready, and she'll never get another shot. Still, as her one blurry eye runs across the results of her last attack, it feels nice. Crimson runs down his arm, over his white shirt, and he takes his quivering hand away to stare at it, as though he's never seen it before. Yes, you pretty boy fuck. That should have been your neck. Fuck you. Fuck your executive jawline. Fuck your symmetry. A tear runs from his eye, slipping into his cut to blister it with his salt. He shakes his head. Why do you make me love you so much at the end? If you loved that, she slurs through broken teeth. Come back. I got more for you. You were beautiful to the last moment, he says, and then he straightens. Your ride is here. He disappears from her vision, leaving her alone in the corridor. The break room door hisses closed out of sight, but the hiss doesn't stop when it hits the floor. She cranes her head, to find the silhouette of one of Blue's creatures dripping down out of the rafters to land gracefully on its talons. It takes a careful step toward her, and she shakily raises the knife. The beast's lips twist and part, obsidian teeth seeming to grow longer and longer with each moment of revelation. It understands when it's been challenged. It charges. I wanted to see you again, Blue. 23. True Colors. Blue awakens from dreams of teeth. Now that she's had her meds and a feeding, her body is marginally more bearable. She needs to reconnect with Anne and put a plan into action. Arms aching, she pulls the beady-eye headset from her nightstand and drops it into her lap, her breath already quicker than it should be. She misses her android's careful ministrations, his help with setting up their interface. She misses the days when she was simply dying, and not dying on board a doomed space station. She flips open her portable terminal and logs in, connecting the cipher drive. There's another message. Tick-tock, Marcellus. Can't wait forever. She can't do anything about their demands, but at least she can see what Marcus has been up to while she slept. Blue. Marcus, are you there? The response is almost immediate. Marcus, I see you are alive and well, Blue. That is welcome. Blue, did you get the power loader hooked up? Marcus, yes. I told you already, but you forgot because you are only human. Marcus, also Juno is online, for the survivors that are hiding out in Rose Eagle. Marcus, I've connected her to Titus so they can share processing power. Your credentials are intact. The safety of the station's occupants supersedes classification restrictions. Blue. Oddly sentimental. Marcus. I am a machine, not a monster. Not like you. The wet crunch of Javier's throat comes roaring back into her ears. She'd done him a favor. No point dwelling on it now. Blue. Go fuck yourself. I'm jacking in. Marcus. Very well. She hoists the headset over her scalp and leans back. The feeling of mentally invading a passive-aggressive target sits strangely in her gut, even as shapes resolve around her in the darkness. First steel panels, then signage. She's near Rose Eagle, in the common part of the skiff, near Anne. A few light-footed sprints and she's outside the door to Rose Eagle. She knocks a rhythmic pattern, and the door slides open to let her inside. She ducks in without a second glance, only to find a surprised group of seven survivors emerging from the various side rooms. Marcus, Lucy says, large eyes running over her like she should be holding a Christmas goose. Where are the others? Blue looks over every face in turn, making sure she's not missing something. It can't be right. Anne isn't here. Where are the others, Marcus? Lucy asks, with the sort of tone a parent might take to an errant child. Did you find them? Blue looks at her. I'm not Marcus. Tension winds across the faces of the other survivors. They look at her like a criminal, or a murderer, or maybe a wolf. It doesn't help that her synthetic body poses a real threat to anyone Blue doesn't like. She's not sure what conversations have happened in her absence, but she knows they weren't flattering. It's the first time she's been face to face with the rest of the crew since her sequestration. She considers telling them she's sorry for lying to them for more than a year, but she's not. She stole funds and resources from a weapons development project to try and cure all genetically based diseases. She's only sorry that a piece of shit company auditor showed up to fuck up her plans. Lucy's question sticks in Blue's head. What do you mean? Where are the others? Blue asks. Which others? Marcus's smooth voice fills the room full of ragged people. It's not Lucy who answers, however, but Nick, one of the techs. Blue doesn't remember much about him, other than the time she caught him sleeping behind some crates in the Skiff Commons. The weird guy who likes to work long hours and sleep anywhere he falls. Wexler and Director Sudler went on a supply run. We're trying to get Rose Eagle working, so we can call for help. His face is impassive. He's not afraid of her. Blue looks him over and nods. He's one of the few people on the station she doesn't hate. Okay. Where would they be? I can back them up. They were going to hit a couple of places, starting with the break room, Nick says. Juno has security cameras, so you could track them if you can find them.
Blue, maybe you can let Marcus help us, Lucy says, and sit tight for rescue.
Maybe you can shut the fuck up, Lucy. You let Anne run outside with that creep. Lucy's eyes turn into saucers.
Fuck you, bitch. Marcus is company property, and Director Sudler is trying to get us out of this shithole, you selfish motherfucking...
Blue turns and opens the door, and everyone shrinks back. Lucy's voice dies in her throat. Be back soon, Blue says. Keep up the good work, Nick. Then she ducks away into the dimly lit hallway, leaving the door to slam in her wake. She rushes to a hiding spot, well aware that the beasts will close in on the sounds. She winds through the hallway on Marcus's silent, strong legs, her thoughts on Anne, alone with Dorian Sudler. Anne, who left her because she was dying. Anne, who was the last person to make her feel alive. She'll kill him if he's done anything to her. It's the same distance to Juno's cage in the break room. The break room takes her through a lot of open corridor, but the ascension to Juno would be in plain sight, ending in the server's glass cage. It was designed to command a view of the common area, and that means more eyes on her. So she decides on the break room, and moves as quickly as possible, clinging to the shadows. She hopes the Snatchers will see in visible light. It had been one of the first questions Weyland-Yutani asked about the beast's military application, but she never did those experiments. She lied about the results. She sees it at the end of a long hallway. A toppled aluminum chair, streaked with blood and gore. She can't tell from this distance if the blood is Dorian's or Anne's, but she knows what her heart wants. Blue inches toward it, sharp eyes darting across the ceiling, over the grates of the cable runs. The beasts can hide anywhere, and she'll be damned if she lets one get the drop on her. When she arrives, she finds bits of bone, and a trail of blood leading off into the darkness, dead-ending at the entrance to one of the cable runs. The Snatchers did this, and whichever body they were carrying would have had to be folded or hacked into pieces to be carried away. Worse, there's no reason to have had a chair in the middle of an open area infested with the beasts. Whatever happened here, this has Dorian's stink all over it. Blue moves to the grating and peers inside, finding only shadow and gore. Desperation settles into her bones. She needs to know that he gave up, plopped down in a chair and left Anne on her own. Maybe the weight of all the people he'd destroyed finally came crashing down on him. There was a lot of bad shit in his past to regret. Just like Blue. Except Dorian doesn't mind hurting people. So regret isn't his speed. Blue searches for other palatable explanations. Maybe he tried to touch Anne, and she kicked his ass, leaving him to die in the hallway. That didn't sound like something Anne would do, not unless he hurt her. Then all bets would be off. Her eyes scan the trail of blood for hairs, but finds none. She should have brought a flashlight, but that'd make her too easy to spot. finding nothing. She sighs and drops her hands to her knees. She never should have given the okay to separate the skiff when the kennels were breached. She should have gone in there, rescued Anne, and shoved that company prick into the waiting maws of the beasts. A strange swishing in her stomach draws her from her thoughts, back to the oozing jet liquid inside her. It's trying to move. It has locomotion. That, or it's found a way to start the birthing process. She needs to get to one of the medbay scanners to check it out, but she won't do that until she's sure whether Anne is safe or dead. She can locate Anne from the video feeds in Juno and stabilize the pressure in the maintenance tubes to get Marcus across. Either way, she'll need to hit the server cage before she can leave. She knows she's supposed to hate Anne, but Blue can't let it go. Maybe, if Blue rescues her, Anne will come to understand the mistakes she made in casting her off. They could still have something together. Straightening, Blue slips off the way she came, her heart overflowing with desperation. Ordered rows of blinking lights extend across the glass, dissolving into foggy spheres where they cross frosted panes. From the ground, Juno's cage looks like frozen starlight. She'd heard rumors from Dick that the skiff module was originally intended to be a colonial prison, but the company purchased it at the last minute. It wouldn't surprise her. It was everything Weyland-Yutani could want. Labyrinthine, bureaucratic, gray, repetitive. Most importantly, repurposing a prison was cheaper than designing a real working environment. The cage would have made a perfect guard shack, looking out over an exercise yard. She takes her first step toward the catwalks, and her nerves crackle. Her Paleolithic mind roars at her to stop, that by moving out of the shadows, predators will see her. Blue swallows her fears and forces herself to climb, taking the stairs two at a time until she reaches the first landing. There are no hiding spaces from here until she reaches Juno. The catwalks are meshed gratings, and even if she went down on her belly, her silhouette would be clearly visible from the ground. There are elevators, but they're located far from the booth, added as an afterthought. Blue hesitates, puzzling through the best approach, until she realizes that there is no best approach. So she runs. The beautiful thing about an artificial body is that she can sprint up three flights of stairs in near silence, arriving as fresh as a summer rain. Even when she'd been healthy, Blue would have been misted with a fine sweat. Reaching the top, she spins to make sure nothing followed her. Empty rafters soar above her, full of cable trays, plumbing, and ventilation ducts. Every curved water and gas return catches Blue's eye, looking like the domed phallic skull of one of the beasts. They're all just tricks, played by a paranoid mind. Pattern recognition. She slips inside the cage, and Juno's banks lie waiting, long streams of white lights signaling the synaptic firing of code. Racks upon racks of servers twist into the room like the walls of a labyrinth, except the monsters are outside. She doesn't have a clear view ahead to the terminal, but she hadn't seen anything from the ground, so she hopes she's alone. The cage stinks of plastic and hot metal. Some of the racks have been destroyed by electrical fire, creating dark gaps like missing teeth. She wonders how much of the server is operational. Maybe Marcus was able to achieve some success. Taking a tentative step inside, she sticks close to the racks. The place isn't that big, and when she reaches the terminal, she lets out a breath. Given the extensive damage from Silver Smile, she'd half expected to find a smoking ruin or a charred husk. Most of its assaults were superficial. Code alterations, deletions, corruptions. But it could have overloaded electrical systems, sent turbines out of envelope, or engaged in any number of other hardware-based attacks. The terminal stands before her like an obelisk, its screen dark. She approaches the keyboard and taps the wake key. Its plastic clack like a gunshot against the white noise of cooling pumps and fans. The Weyland-Yutani logo animates on screen. Then data connections interweave as it boots up. She logs in with her old credentials, the ones Marcus reinstated. Weyland-Yutani systems servers. Titus and Juno emergency network. Bootloader version 0.0.0.1 by Marcus. Query? Despite the danger, she can't help but smirk at Marcus's formality. Only an android would put a version number on an emergency system. Pressing each key slowly, so the clicks don't resonate in the keyboard's metal housing, she types. Crew locator. Wexler, comma, Anne. No crew designators. Abort, retry, fail. Shit. Anne isn't going to be listed in the Juno database, since the system was wiped. If it was working, Blue could have gotten a public feed, or at least a location. She remembers the chair in the middle of the hall. Video analytics. What should I analyze? Objects out of place. No historical data for comparison. Abort, retry, fail. Blue glances back. She doesn't have time to be trading bullshit queries with a brain-drained computer. I need to find my friend. The moment she hits return, she realizes how absurd the query is. Is your friend alive or deceased? Blue's breath hitches. Unknown. Death would have occurred within last 2 hours. The screen flashes, and shapes fall into place. Blue recognizes the image as the pixelated feed from the skiff break room. Anne stands in the dead center of the frame, her back turned. Blue holds her breath, expecting the skeletal black shape of a snatcher to descend upon her. Instead, Anne half turns as Dorian enters the frame with an aluminum chair, swinging it directly into her face. No, Blue breathes. But it's there in stark electronic truth. It won't be denied. He catches her flat-footed and beats her to the ground, savaging her over and over with the chair. No, Blue repeats, but she knows how this ends. Dorian drags Anne and the chair out into the hall, and the camera feed switches to the exterior. Anne gathers her wits long enough to cut him with her boot knife, and Blue dares to hope this is the story of Dorian's death. But the director slinks off camera, and Anne screams as one of the creatures descends upon her. Cold fear becomes unassailable reality. Blue can't bring herself to blink, to move. She knew Dorian was fucking evil. Always knew there was something horrifying about him, but this is too much. Why did he do it? She gnashes her teeth, and her hands shake, and a raw fury grows inside of her. It's unlike anything she's ever experienced. She wants nothing more than to rip his arms from their sockets. With trembling fingers, she reaches down and types. Go to beginning of incident. The feed jumbles and rewinds to the moment before Anne takes a chair to the face. Transcribe what is being said. Juno plays through the footage several times, running further back with each cycle. When it reaches the point where Dorian tries to get into Anne's pants, Blue stops in disgust, then moves forward to their discussion. There are 2,000 packets in here, so that's 15 calories per packet, 30,000 calories total. That fits with what the other survivors told her, but at some point the conversation changes. There are other supplies. You said there were bars in here. I needed to talk to you alone. Minutes later, Blue has what she needs to understand. Her head throbs. There's something wrong with her physical body. It's as if she's losing her mind, and it's leaking out through her ears. She wants to tear this place to pieces and burn away everyone inside, everyone who sided with Dorian Suttler. Everyone who let the monster come here. She could probably do it, too. Kill them all. At the very least, she could snap Lucy's little neck for siding with the enemy so many times. She could get access to where they were hiding and turn the creatures loose on them. Or she could continue with her mission, getting Marcus and her body to the remaining escape pod. Or she could send Marcus to help the others and wait for rescue. Or she could take the easy way out. Before making a decision, though, she needs to beat Dorian to death, wherever he is. The key is to find him. She begins to type. Video analytics. What should I analyze? Location of mail from incident. Titus and Juno emergency network. Blue shakes her head. The goddamn thing is going to reboot in the middle of her query. She slams a hand down on the console, before remembering that any noise could bring the creatures down upon her. The screen doesn't go to the next line either, it's just stuck there. She checks the connection panel at the base of the system, listening for any arcing or sputtering. Maybe Silver Smile took a chunk out of the console when it rampaged through the server farm and burned up some of the boards. As she stands, her eye catches on the ready cursor. The system is waiting for input. She types, location of mail from incident. Titus and Juno emergency network. Marcus. The voice comes from behind her. She turns to see him emerging from the stairwell, long-legged and malicious, his face oozing blood from his knife wound. Rage fills her soul, and all she can think about is throwing him through the side of Juno's cage. She's going to pound his body against the bulletproof glass until only miserable broken bits remain. Engage Override Epsilon. 24. Extinguished. Override confirmed. Locking out pilot controls. Dorian's heart soars with glee. He'd been gambling that things were too hectic for Blue to have perfect control of Marcus, and it had paid off massive dividends. Because of her negligence, he gets to live. He gets to win. Dorian takes a step closer to the android, passing his hands in front of its face. "I can still see you, Director Suttler," Marcus says. "I'm simply awaiting orders." "Terminate all speech and motor functions," Dorian says. Instantly, Marcus snaps to the ground in a fetal position, a puppet with his strings cut. Dorian leans down to touch his forehead, running his fingertips over the all-too-perfect skin. He strokes the wavy blonde hair, jerking some free at the temple. "I love this place, Blue," he whispers, sitting down next to Marcus. I think these might be the greatest hours of my life. You're still logged in, aren't you? I know you're listening to me." He pulls out his cigarette case. He's down to the last three. Dorian has always been a pack-a-day smoker, but ever since arriving on the Cold Forge, he's essentially quit. He only wants one now because he's about to fuck these people harder than he's ever fucked anyone in his life. "I didn't enjoy killing Anne," he says. "But I couldn't have her talking to everyone about me, telling them I tried to leave them all behind. That might impact how the others think of me, you know. I liked Anne. She was a great lay, and quick with a knife." He pats his pocket for his matches and draws out the case. Only three left, one per cigarette. Must be fate. but the striker is missing. Rage rumbles inside him like distant thunder, but he tamps it down. He can't show Blue how angry he is.
You know, I can't believe this is the second time I've had to get rid of your body.
My father always said, if you don't have time to do it right, you must have time to